Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, November 14th, 2017. A South Sudanese Supreme Court justice resigns, calling the country's justice system a mockery. And human rights activists call on Ugandan officials to arrest President Bashir.
As a state party to the Rome Statute, Uganda has an unequivocal obligation to cooperate with the ICC in relation to the enforcement of warrants of arrest issued against Omar Bashir.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan Supreme Court Justice Kukurulo Lopita Moreno Pitiap has resigned from his post, according to a resignation letter obtained by this program. In a letter dated today and addressed to President Salva Kiir Mayardit, Justice Moreno says he has stepped down from the bench effective today because the independence of the judiciary in the Republic of South Sudan has, in his words, become a mockery. He also complains in his resignation letter to the president about the poor administration of the judiciary by Chief Justice Chun Rich Madut. Moreno says it is difficult for the judiciary to properly administer justice and guarantee supremacy of the rule of law, saying the judicial system in the country is no longer capable of delivering justice in accordance with the Constitution. In July, President Kiir fired 14 judges, which sparked outrage among judges who demanded that their colleagues be reinstated. In addition, judges in South Sudan have been on strike since May, demanding changes to the judiciary, including an increase in pay and improved working conditions. Attempts to reach Justice Moreno Pitiap by phone have been unsuccessful. Unconfirmed reports say Justice Moreno has gone into hiding. Human rights activists in Uganda are calling on Ugandan officials to arrest Sudan President Omar al-Bashir, who's in Uganda for a three-day official visit. Activists want Ugandan officials to have Bashir arrested and turned over to the International Criminal Court to face trial. President Bashir was indicted in 2009 on 5 counts of crimes against humanity and 2 counts of war crimes for events in western Darfur. He was also charged with genocide during the Darfur conflict, as we hear from Mugume Davis Wakarind in Kampala, Uganda.
Mohamed Ndifuna, executive director of the Human Rights Network, read a statement on behalf of dozens of human rights groups in Uganda.
As a state party to the Rome Statute, Uganda has an unequivocal obligation to cooperate with the ICC in relation to the enforcement of warrants of arrest issued against Omar Bashir.
Sarah Chika, who works for the International Center for Transitional Justice, agrees that Uganda must arrest Bashir because of its legal obligation to the ICC. She says Ugandan officials should not spare Mr. Bashir because of either politics or economic interests.
We are not appealing to the president's benevolent nature. We are a country governed by the rule of law. Our statements, our position is grounded in the law. It's grounded in the Rome Statute. It's grounded in the International Criminal Court Act. And importantly, it is grounded in the Constitution, which recognizes the enforcement of international treaties that Uganda is a party to. So we are not begging Mr. Museveni to fulfill his obligations. We are asking the government of Uganda to fulfill its obligations under the law.
This is not Mr. Bashir's first visit to Uganda since being indicted by the ICC. He traveled to Uganda in May to attend President Museveni's inauguration. This week's visit is aimed at improving bilateral relations between the two countries, which were seen as foes during the 1990s and early 2000s when both presidents accused each other of supporting rebels fighting in each other's countries. Ndifuna says it is wrong for Kampala to host a person who is an ICC fugitive.
It's like having a neighbor who rapes your daughter, but is the neighbor that you sell your products to, or your produce for that matter to. And you have to weigh whether you are going to take action against the neighbor and the possibility of your own starvation may be glaring in you in the face.
Chika warns Uganda could face sanctions by the UN if it fails to arrest Bashir this time.
We ask the government to maintain a consistent approach that stands with the rights of victims, the victims in Darfur who have waited for years for justice. And it can do that by arresting and surrendering President Omar Bashir to the ICC to face trial.
Uganda government spokesman Ofwono Pondo says his country cannot arrest a sitting head of state. and he says Uganda believes President Bashir is instrumental in bringing stability in the region. President Bashir has visited several other African nations since facing ICC indictment on war crimes, including Chad, South Africa, and South Sudan. Both Chad and South Africa are signatories to the ICC. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The government of the Netherlands has donated $6 million to fight hunger in South Sudan. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization says it will use the money to help farmers, fishermen, and cattle keepers throughout the country to rebuild their livelihoods. Nabil Biagio has the story for VOA from Juba.
Peter Lapool, deputy head of cooperation at the Embassy of the Netherlands in Juba, says last week's $6 million donation is meant to help relieve the dire food security situation in South Sudan, which was revealed recently in the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, report from the National Bureau of Statistics.
Just a week ago, the new IPC report on South Sudan came out and it showed that the number of people which are facing insecurity in food and even, of course, famine is on the rise again. And we hope with this contribution to help to get that level down.
Lapool says his government made the donation to the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, because it is convinced that the best way to fight hunger in South Sudan is to support livelihood activities.
The way the FAO is helping these farmers, these livestock keepers, these fishermen, many of them women, we think is a good way to increase food security in South Sudan.
Serge Tissot, who heads FAO in South Sudan, says the money will be used to do exactly that.
We will support people through the distribution of seed, distribution of vegetable seed, distribution of fishing equipment, but we will also use this money for the vaccination and the treatment of livestock.
Tissot says the general deterioration in food security across the country was caused mainly by the conflict, which has forced farmers to abandon their fields and become refugees or internally displaced persons. He says FAO's emergency response program tries to boost local food production.
The ultimate target is to increase the production and to rehabilitate the livelihood of all the people involved in agriculture and in fishery.
Tissot says FAO's emergency program will be spread across the entire country, not just target specific areas.
We have people facing food insecurity not only in Greater Upper Nile like before. No, we have people facing food insecurity quite everywhere across the country. You have people in the area of Wao. You have people at the border with Uganda. You have still people in Greater Upper Nile. Food insecurity is a countrywide problem.
Tissot says, while the $6 million will provide much-needed relief, FAO estimates it will need $60 million in 2018 to implement emergency and resilience programs that target 4 million people. The IPC report says some 4.8 million people are now food insecure in South Sudan and that the number is expected to rise to 5.1 million people from January to March 2018. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. A South Sudanese doctor tries to convince mothers not to engage in the ancient practice of extracting babies' teeth. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when was the last time you did something that made you feel proud? I founded my private school called Promise College Secondary School, and I'm proud of it because I want to help my citizen in South Sudan.
That was 2015 December when I took a step, because everybody was against journalism, especially in South Sudan. But when I said it is my own belief and my own interest, my own like and my what I love, so why don't I go for it? I shouldn't be listening to what other people say. It should be coming from me. If I want it, I'll have to go for it.
I think a few weeks ago, when I finally managed to balance my life socially and professionally and just get a good work-life, social-life balance.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
Listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday Health segment, and today we're talking about oral mutilation. Doctors in Bor are actively discouraging mothers from the widespread practice of extracting babies' teeth long before children's permanent teeth are about to come in. For hundreds of years, South Sudanese mothers in certain ethnic groups have been extracting babies' teeth because they think small children will otherwise be exposed to fever, loss of appetite, and other illnesses. Dengai Deng has this report for VOA from Jonglei State's capital of Bor.
Doctors say extracting baby teeth too early is dangerous. It can lead to infections, deformity of their gums, and other problems. Achol Mawei is a mother of an 8-month-old baby boy, Nyer Mawei. Speaking in Dinka, Mawei says she removed her baby teeth because she believes doing so prevents serious health problems that could even lead to death.
I removed my child's teeth because these teeth cause swelling at the root of teeth of a newborn baby. If these teeth are not removed, it causes a lot of problems for that baby. The blood could stick under the root and clot, making it hard for the baby to breathe, causing fever. Then the child would die. That is why my child's teeth were removed.
Ayada Bardizo, the mother of a 7-month-old baby boy, Joel Ayada, says she too believes extracting a baby teeth is good for the child's well-being. Speaking in Dinka, Bardizo says she has 4 children and all their teeth were removed during infancy.
If the baby's teeth are not removed, it could be dangerous for the baby's health, because it causes diarrhea, fever, cough, loss of appetite, and the baby will always feel sick.
Dr. Gangarej, who works at the Pediatric Ward in Bor State Hospital, says that ancient belief is wrong and it puts babies' health at risk. Dr. Rej says extracting baby teeth could lead to excessive bleeding, causing anemia or even death.
It is a belief by Dinka tribe, at least. And I think has no any medical means. What it does, when you remove teeth from a newborn baby, of course will have some consequences later. What happens, that will cause a scar at the baby gum. Normally when you have to have teeth coming, you know, in a natural way, they will come in different way now. Now when you become an adult, The your teeth will not look, you know, naturally. And that's why you see people now in greater Bor with bad teeth.
Dr. Rej says in the past year, Bor Hospital recorded 4 deaths of infants whose teeth were extracted. He strongly advises mothers against extracting baby teeth at such a young age.
If the baby has a fever, maybe there's another cause of fever. We have something called neonatal sepsis. If the mother is sick, the baby also can get sick. And this one is treatable. So we really don't need to go and dig down on on children to teach, you know, to the person who even making this practice is not a medical personnel. So why you have to do that anyway?
Elizabeth Akwal, a mother of four, agrees it is wrong to extract baby's teeth.
The removal of the teeth from the baby is something that's not good. So, like, for example, like me, when I was given birth with my firstborn, so people were insist that the upper teeth need to be removed, the lower teeth, I was refusing. But yet I have not been given birth before. They took my child and they removed. When I give birth to another baby, I refuse. So when I feel my baby having fever, I just take to the doctor.
Akwali is encouraging other mothers to take the doctor's advice and not extract their baby's teeth, no matter what others in their tribe tell them. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
A church leader is urging South Sudan's leaders to unite the South Sudanese people rather than divide them along tribal lines. Right Reverend John Jok Chol, Bishop of the Okobo Diocese of the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan, tells my colleague John Tanza that South Sudanese must change how they view people from other ethnic groups if their country is to move forward.
To tell you the truth as a bishop, I'm very tired for one thing in our country. That thing is generalization. When a newer man makes a mistake, maybe against one of the members of a community in South Sudan, and then that community will say, Nuer has done this. We are saying this generalization should be avoided because it drives us to what is called tribalism. And we know tribalism is a syndrome that has no cure at all. As people of God, living under one nation, we shouldn't encourage to live as tribe. Because I personally believe that the 64 tribes in South Sudan are not a curse, but a blessing.
You were telling the youth here that you will be traveling to Juba with the same message. Are you confident that the leadership there will listen to you? Because for them, they think differently. They're not thinking about what you're thinking about.
Well, you know, so many actors have been trying to talk to the leadership in Juba, to the rebel movements, to different stakeholders, searching for how will this anarchy be restored into peace and stability in South Sudan. Though there is no good reason yelled by a different group who have been talking to different individual politicians or to the government, but that one does not stop me from going to convey my message. Because my message is not harmful to the SFLM in the government or to the SFLM IO. Because my message is talking about the unity, forgiveness, love, and mutual understanding. Wherever you are with the IO or with the government, you are a South Sudanese. Let us not be pushed by politicians against the wall so that we kill ourselves on a tribal basis.
And so, lastly, if you were given an opportunity to speak to Dr. Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir, what would you tell them?
I would appeal to Dr. Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir Mayard that you were elected by the people during 2010 general election. You did not choose yourself. You were chosen by the people. And those who elected you were the people, were the living people, were not the dead. And if you continue fighting, and then that fighting will make a lot of harm against our people. So many people are now displaced. So many people have no even freedom of movement because of that fight. As our leaders, please put aside your differences and try to look for durable solution to the crisis. Let us work hard for the future of the next generation. And if we don't do it today, no one will do it tomorrow. And then the future generation will also be in chaos. So for that reason, I have no any problem with you, Dr. Riek, with our dear President, President Kiir Mayardit. But because I know that incident in Juba was brought by political disagreement, and for that reason, disagreement are always subject to solution. People sit down and discuss, you know, until they find a durable solution. get a durable solution to the ongoing, you know, conflict, so that our people live in peace and they challenge back on development and national building.
That was the Right Reverend John Jok Chul, Bishop of the Okobo Diocese of the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan, speaking to my colleague John Tanza in the Rwandan capital, Kigali, earlier today. Kenya's Supreme Court begins its review of petitions challenging last month's election. With security forces surrounding the court today heard arguments on three complaints. The justices are expected to issue their ruling next Monday. Two petitions, one filed by an opposition member and the other from a civil society group, argue that the October 26th election rerun is void. They say the results should be thrown out because the Election Commission failed to hold fresh nominations after the court ordered a rerun of the August vote. The third petition argues that the opposition National Super Alliance should pay for the damage caused during weeks of protest ahead of the October vote. Incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta won the rerun election, which the opposition largely boycotted. Opposition leader Raila Odinga, who ran in August, sat out of the October contest. In an unprecedented step, Zimbabwe's military leaders have warned the country's ruling ZANU-PF party to stop purging members linked to the liberation struggle. Reporter Kudzai Vinavashi reports.
Flanked by more than 30 generals and senior officers, the head of the armed forces, General Constantino Chiwenga, gave a blunt warning.
The current purging and cleansing process in ZANU-PF, which so far is targeting mostly members associated with our liberation history, is a serious cause of concern to us in the Defense Forces. We must remind those behind the current treacherous shenanigans that when it comes to matters of protecting our revolution, the military will not hesitate to step in.
The threat underscores the military's concerns about the ouster of party members who had taken part in the independence fight against Britain. Chief among them was last week's dismissal of Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Many of his supporters also have been pushed out of the party. However, First Lady Grace Mugabe is now expected to become Vice President, putting her in place to eventually succeed her husband, 93-year-old President Robert Mugabe. Chiwenga made clear in his speech that the military sees the purge as divisive.
It is with humility and a heavy heart that we come before you to pronounce the indisputable reality that there is instability in ZANU-PF today, and as a result, anxiety in the country at large. There is distress, trepidation, and despondence within the nation.
Political analysts link the army to Mnangagwa's faction in the party known as Lacoste. But many younger party members back Grace Mugabe. ZANU-PF Youth League leader Kudzai Chipanga made clear his opposition to Chiwenga's comments.
Defending the revolution and our leader, the president, is an ideal we live for, and if need be, it is a principle we are prepared to die for. From the outset, we would like to make it clear that we have every respect for the armed forces in this country. We, however, totally against the bulk of the press statements issued by General Chiwenga yesterday. We believe that the views he exposed are his personal opinions and not the collective view of the security forces.
The political tensions are being felt in the country. Few political analysts in the country have been willing to comment on Chiwenga's speech. Some divisions of the state media have pulled down articles on the developments, while others didn't cover the speech at all. Former Vice President Mnangagwa has not appeared in public since last week, and he is said to have left the country. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Human rights activists are criticizing President Donald Trump for failing to press Asian leaders on rights abuses during his five-nation swing through East Asia. VOA White House correspondent Peter Heinlein reports the issue came to a head during Trump's final stop in the Philippines.
Protesters clashed with Manila riot police and burned effigies of Donald Trump Monday as the U.S. leader met Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte on the sidelines of a regional summit.
We believe that the meeting will not bring any benefits for the Filipino people, but would rather worsen the human rights situation.
Inside the summit hall, Trump avoided human rights, instead emphasizing regional harmony.
We want our partners in the region to be strong, independent, and prosperous, in control of their own destinies, and satellites to no one. These are the principles behind our vision for a free and open Indo-Pacific.
There were conflicting reports about whether Trump and his Philippine host talked about the touchy subject of the extrajudicial killings that are part of Duterte's war against drugs, which human rights groups say are crimes against humanity. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said human rights came up briefly in the context of Duterte's anti-drug campaign. A Philippine government spokesman said the opposite.
Well, there was no mention of human rights. There was no mention of extralegal killings. There was only a rather lengthy discussion about the Philippine war on drugs, with President Duterte doing most of the explaining.
When a reporter tried to ask the question during a photo opportunity, he was abruptly cut off.
Mr. President, would you be bringing up human rights issues? Is there anything about
Thank you.
Trump's policy of avoiding uncomfortable topics such as human rights in public has provoked a harsh social media backlash, including from his Republican Party nemesis, Senator John McCain, who tweeted, "And human rights obviously not a priority in POTUS's meeting with Duterte. Again, sad."
Failing to raise human rights emboldens abusive leaders. So make no mistake, you know, governments like Vietnam and Cambodia, they see the world's inaction in the face of their increasing persecution of dissidents and other things, and they are encouraged by it, and it allows them to be even more aggressive in cracking down.
After 12 days of pomp and ceremony, honor guards, state dinners, and toasts to a brighter future, Trump heads home, hailing progress on North Korea and trade, but leaving his administration's human rights critics unsatisfied. Peter Heinlein, VOA News, The White House.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Ra Ra by Tekno. Listening to Tekno with the song Ra Ra. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. We want to hear your comments about the show. Drop us a line on the web at southsudan@voanews.com, or you can find us on our Facebook site at South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Big things, so.
to make them talk about the small things. So yeah.